Blog Talk Radio.
Oh!
The road to healing is paved with reflection. You may not remember the day it happened. You may not recall the time. You just know how it made you feel. Your Me Too moment changed everything. But you don't have to feel alone. Come to the well and speak your truth. Share your Me Too moment. Your strength and courage will help others. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Woman at the Well. I am Beverly Black, and I am the host. I am an advocate, and I am the creator of the Gumbo for the Soul series anthology. We are brought to you by GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. And I want to welcome you to today's show. Testifying today will be Jacqueline Rochelle Raines. And she is going to give us a very candid and open account of her Me Too moment. So let me tell you just a little bit about this trend-setting author, business leader, political scientist, and respected social, economical, public policy maker. She is no joke on the political field. She is no joke when it comes to taking action in the call for our civil rights. Her book, Move Beyond the Colored Line, Racial Discrimination, is a large part of America's race and equality problem. The other part of the problem is you. Jacqueline Rochelle shares provocative stories about who she is, who she's been, and who she is today. So we are going to have this discussion with her right here at the well. Hello, Jacqueline. How are you, Queen?
Hello, Queen. How are you? I am doing well, doing well.
Wonderful. I'm so blessed to have you here on The Woman at the Well. And, you know, I'd like to jump right into it. But first, I want to let everyone know, if they are listening online and they'd like to call in, the number is 347-539-5285. And if for any reason you are online and you'd like to switch over, or excuse me, if you have called in and you'd like to switch over online, our studio is blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. And again, we are a Gumbo for the Soul International family brand created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly. God is good all the time. Now, Jacqueline, I'm going to ask you some questions, but first I want you to just tell our audience just a little bit about yourself. Tell me about the adolescent, innocent version of yourself, where you're from, the family dynamics, what did you want to become when you grew up? You know, tell us about the Jacqueline that before any Me Too moments or,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, again, I want to thank you, Beverly, for inviting me on. Of course, these Me Too moments are very, very important to all of us because we are overcome by our testimonies. And I think that, I know that it is the survival and the victory of others that helps us heal and move forward when we've been injured in some way, shape, or form. But I actually grew up in the South, typical African-American values and ideas. My mother was a single mother, but my mother was a hardworking woman. She went to work and she took care of her children, never missed a meal, never went a day without food, without heat, without shoes on our feet. So we grew up with really strong work ethic. My mother had seven siblings who were very involved in our growth and development.
Amen.
And, you
Amen.
Know, I mean, when I say very involved, they, you know, and it's interesting because we didn't get a lot of choices the way that kids got choices today. And I tell you, in all of my, with my five siblings and all of my cousins, it was 26 of us all together. And everybody went to school, everybody went to church, everybody graduated from high school, everybody either went to college, they went to the military, they got married, or they went to work. But, you know, through that structure, and you know, that village, they didn't miss a beat at all. And that included, you know, God and discipline, not sparing the rod if they needed to. So we, I had a good upbringing, in Mobile, Alabama, had, friends that I'm friends with today. As a matter of fact, you know, I, want to, offer condolences to one of my, my dear friends who we've been knowing each other since the sixth grade. She actually passed on yesterday. So,
My goodness gracious.
You know,
well, my condolences go out to you. My prayers go out to you
and
the family. So I know that's really hard because, like you say, you've been knowing her since the sixth grade, and I still have friends from elementary school, and so I know that's hard. That's like a sister, you know, after all these years.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Mm. You know, and so and again, you know, those are that just reminds us not to take life for granted, because one of the things, you know, through that phone call yesterday, I had to do some reflection of the fact that I was home over the holidays, and I didn't get an opportunity to see her because I just did not think that I would never get another opportunity to see her. And, you know, so I just want to remind our listeners that when your heart moves you to check on your loved ones, go ahead and do that. Particularly, you know, we are such, all of us. I mean, even though, as the kids say, I'm a half century old, I still, you know, we're into this technology where we're texting and emailing and we're not calling the way that we used to. So I want to just remind everybody that, you know, pick up the phone sometime and just give a call, because you just never know what people are going through when you're texting. Even though you're keeping in contact, you never know until you hear the voices. So let me come back to you too. But, you know, I just had God laid that on my heart just to say that. So.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And that's what this is about. This is about saying what, you know, needs to come out. We're here, we're spirit-led, and you're so right. We do absolutely need to make sure that we're in touch with folk. I have folk that left social media, and they said, hey, if you want to get in contact with me, you know my number. And I'm kind of like that, too, where, you know, if something's going on in someone's life, don't expect me to have been on social media to find out, okay? That's like my, you know, pet peeve besides cracked heels. So I cannot stand, you know, a pet peeve of mine is not being in touch. And so I'm glad that you put that message out there. And again, we are on The Woman at the Well. I'm Beverly Black, and I'm your host at The Woman at the Well. And I am speaking with Jacqueline Rochelle Raines, and she is just reflecting back on growing up. And now that we are all into this technology and, you know, life is not promised to us, we must definitely stay prayerful and mindful to reach out and be in touch. And so now back to your story about the strong foundation that was laid out by such a large and enduring family, and never wanting for nothing, and just really having that village around you to ground you.
Yes. Well, let me just make sure. So in terms of never wanting for nothing, there were things that we wanted for. Of course, my mom was a single mom, and her first and foremost, her goal was to make sure that we had the things that we needed. There were lots of things that we wanted. And I think as a result of that, growing up, seeing my uncles and aunts and in what I would describe as a child as intact, you know, households, one with a husband and a wife, that's something that I always aspired to. And my adult life began immediately after I graduated from high school. Rather than going on to college, I got married and immediately started having children. So for me, here is the place in my life where the real life joys and pains began, because it wasn't long after I became an adult and got married that I realized that life was this ever-changing consequence of our sequence of both controllable and uncontrollable events, and things that I had dreamed of and envisioned based on what I'd seen with my uncles and aunts. I got some of those things in my marriage, but the one thing that I got that I was not expecting was hit. So that
well, before
part.
Before you go into that, because I do want you to be very transparent and let us know. But I want to just back up a little bit to another part of the first question.
Okay.
Because you're going right into the second question.
This
is a perfect segue into the second question. So just pin that. One of the things that you weren't expecting in your marriage was getting hit. Now back up to the first question, and then we're going to come back forward. Part of the first question is, what did you want to be when you grew up? You did explain all the different diverse areas that the family went into, but was there like a certain drive or passion, like, you know, were you watching singers or actors or medical, you know, the medical field, or was there any particular passion that you felt as a child that you wanted to be when you grew up?
Absolutely. I actually wanted to be a politician.
All right now.
We lived right in front of one of the female role model, Mrs. Figgers. She was on the city council, and I loved hearing her speak. As a matter of fact, I love hearing strong role model, female role models speak and exert themselves, period, even the teachers. So it was going to be between teaching, preaching, or being a politician. And I say that because in all of those areas, it was always an advocate. You were always going to be advocating or helping someone. And when I fast forward, I look at my life, I see that those, you know, not in just in one way, but in many ways, those visions of my life or my dreams for myself have manifested.
Well, praise be to God. Praise be to God for that. Praise be to God. My life has taken some twists and turns, and I remember my daughter asking me, what did I want to be when I grew up? And I said, a writer. And she said, no, what did you want to be when you grew up? Because I'm a writer. And she couldn't believe that my life, through all the twists and turns, had landed back where I wanted to be. So praise be to God that you are where you wanted to be. And we will segue now into what was your Me Too moment.
Like I said, my Me Too moment again was when I realized that I jumped out of the skillet and into the fire when it came to adulthood. You know, a lot of times, and I'm, you know, I'll speak for myself as a young teenager going into adulthood. I wanted to be grown. I wanted to be out of the out from under the influence of my mother and the structure of my mother, and I wanted to be on my own. So my Me Too moment was when I was about 4 months pregnant, and I realized that I basically got out of the skillet into the fire. And I want to let me express this to women that may be going through unhealthy or a highly volatile relationship. Domestic violence doesn't always mean that you get hit every day, or that you get hit every week, or even that you get hit every month, or you know, it's if you get hit any time, it doesn't matter about the infrequency of the occurrences. Please keep at the forefront of your mind that you can be subject to a violent outbreak when you least expect it. My ex-husband didn't hit me every day. He didn't hit me every month. It would be a year or two sometimes before we got into a physical altercation. But every time it happened, it took something from me in terms of the love and the respect and the belief that that household was going to remain intact. And one of the reasons that I stayed so long was because of church and my belief in church, and that God would want me to stay and try to work my marriage out, that the mothers in the church would talk to me and say, you know, that this is a test and this is a trial.
Pin that for me right there, your pastor, because we're going to come back to that, because everybody got, you know, like Anita Baker say, everybody's got opinions on the way our life's supposed to be, okay? And we're going to pin about what pastor said. Let's go back to you were, and thank you so much. You're being so honest and transparent, and it's really helpful because you are right to let our listeners know, men and women alike, that it's not always the frequency of a physical encounter or a fight. And I want to go even so far as to say that abuse is even a mental, psychological occurrence, because, you know, that's where it all starts. That's where it all starts.
I agree. I agree.
It starts in the mind. And so,
Agree.
Yeah. So I just want to
agree, because I can even go ahead.
Well, no, I just wanted to go back to you were 4 months pregnant, but you can go ahead and expound about that, because I want to jump back to what the church mothers and pastors said. So go ahead and expound. You said you can even agree as far as and expound as far as the psychological abuse.
Absolutely, because that's one of the things what I can remember being pregnant and thinking, being newly married and pregnant, thinking to myself, you know what, this is not going to work, and that I should, you know, get out now. But I can remember the conversations of you're not going to be able to make it by yourself, you know, and then just reflecting on how hard it was for my mom, but she did it, you know. And so it's when you talk about the psychology of abuse or domestic violence, sometimes and some of the women that and your callers or your listeners may be able to kind of identify with why we stay in those situations, you know, even though your mind is telling you that you should probably leave, but you get to you have the abuser in your ear telling you that you can't make it. And then you are in your ear telling you how hard it's going to be if you are a single mother. So
let me add to that. I'm sorry, but let me add to what you're saying and piggyback. You know, we also are told, you know, you have to stay together for the kids. You know, you have to stay in the abuse for the kids. Now, think about that. Let that sit in for a minute, and we're going to come back to what Pastor Nim said right after this break. You are on The Woman at the Well, and I'm having a candid conversation with Jacqueline Rochelle Raines, and she is being very transparent about her Me Too moment. So we will be right back after this break.
Hey guys, it's me, Michelle Berard, host of Somewhere in the Middle and founder and CEO of Urban Book Editor, LLC. Are you feeling like you're stuck and can't move forward? Have you been struggling to birth a big goal like a book or a business? Are you feeling overwhelmed and looking to make changes in your career? If you're at all like me, when that deer in headlights feeling hits you, you just don't know where to begin. Yeah, you can talk with friends or family, but when you're in need of an objective opinion, it helps to speak with someone who's prepared to listen and to provide practical guidance to help you move forward. That's where a coach comes in. That's why I'm so excited to share with you that energy worker and coach Julia Black and I have teamed up to help you get unstuck and start moving towards your goals again. And to make it easy for you, we're offering a complimentary call with one of us to help you start moving forward. All you have to do is go to WeRiseMovement.com to schedule your free insight and inspiration call with either Julia or me. The insight and inspiration call can help you get clear about your goals, uncover hidden challenges that may be hindering your progress, discover steps you can take today to move toward accomplishing your goals, and you'll leave the session feeling renewed, re-energized, and inspired to take action. Visit WeRiseMovement.com and schedule your free insight and inspiration call today. That's WeRiseMovement.com.
All right, welcome back to The Woman at the Well. I am Beverly Black. I am the host and creator of The Woman at the Well on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand. And we are hosted and sponsored, we are sponsored today by our guest, Jacqueline Rochelle Raines. And she has a lot of information to give you at the conclusion of our show on where you can find her publications, connect with her, and get to know all the different veins that she is about. But here at The Well, we are talking about her Me Too moment. So, Jacqueline, when it comes to the advice of the, you know, the church mothers, Pastor Nim, people that, you know, people that feel as though you cannot make it on your own. Even like you said, your own reference was that, you know, your mother was a single mother, but yet she made it. A lot of voices in your own head to discourage you from getting out of a bad situation. But ultimately, the decision has to be made. Well, let's get back to Pastor now. What did Pastor say? I really want to know what Pastor said.
Well, during my marriage, I know it may be hard to believe, but I was married to a man in an apostolic church. And so all while professing to be saved and sanctified, he would have these violent outbreaks. So the pastor would say, you know, God would fix it. And he would say, you know, he would remind me of the scriptures about marriage being honorable and staying, you know, in my marriage and holy, get with some of the women of the church, some of the mothers of the church, and we would fast and we would pray, you know. And I can remember, and if anybody doesn't know about apostolic and Pentecostal churches, during the time that I was involved in the church, we would testify. We would literally get up and stand up. There was a testimony period where we would get up and stand up and talk about the goodness of the Lord. We would talk about some of our challenges and ask, you know, those that knew the words of prayer to pray with us and pray for us. And there was one occasion where
wait, let me have you pin the one occasion. Girl. See, for our listeners that don't know Apostolic Pentecostal Church, let me translate for you. They tarried long. Okay. They pray all the day long. That's what Jackie really wants you to know, that wasn't no quick brush over prayer, baby. They prayed and they fasted, and sometimes those sessions, you could be there for 3-4 hours, be hungry and all. I don't know what, when you get out of church. Okay, go ahead.
You've hit the nail right on the head. I mean,
you ain't got to
when
tell
we go
me.
To, you're talking about going to the well, you know, we go to the altar.
Girl, come on now.
We would go to the altar and, you know, and we would go there earnestly. And I, you know, as a young mother and a young wife, I would go to the altar earnestly, you know, humbly, asking God to, you know, just keep my marriage and to strengthen my marriage. Like I say, it wasn't a situation where it happened all the time. The fact that it would happen in the psychological view, some of the words that he would say to me, some of the things that he would do, with things that I just did not expect. It was just what we call cognitive dissonance. It didn't make sense that you could talk to your wife that way or the mother of your children that way. And so I would be fasting and praying. And the one occasion I got up in church and I talked about how good things had been going, and you know, and it was a testimony, my sister. I was testifying, and I was telling them, you know, that my husband and I, we were doing good. There was nothing going, no more fighting. He hadn't hit me. Oh, my God, when we got home, he was so angry with me that we got into it that day, that Sunday. Leaving church and when we got home. So I wanted to
let me have you pin that. Girl, if I had you pin one more thing. But I just want you to pin that because there is something about people that they don't want the truth known. And they don't want it shared. They don't want it publicized. They want you to build them up in areas that they're not displaying. So you wouldn't have had to testify that testimony had he ever fought with you at all. One, two, even if someone hits you once a year, that's once a year too many. That's once a year too much. So for anybody out there listening, any mental, psychological, or verbal abuse is too much abuse. And just the fact that to hear you testifying about how everyone almost like is just historically played out in women's lives, that everyone prays and comes to the woman like it's up to her alone. Now, we can break this thing if we pray right and hard enough and long enough.
That's
while
right.
The man's still walking around going back and forth to and fro in the earth, you see, doing him. Whether they're working, providing, coming home at night or whatever the case, still the woman seems to be the one pinpointed and having the focus placed on her, like she's making or breaking the family. But they never seem to gather the men folk and say, look, I'm going to spell it out, KNEEGROW. You know, look at here, brother. Get yourself in check. You know, and it's really not a laughing matter, but, you know, we make light of things that have come to pass in our lives because it's the silliness that we fail for, you know, and it's the silliness to think that everybody should be gathering and praying and putting all the strength and responsibility on the woman. And then the man, you testifying that, hey, things are better and you really don't have to, you know, worry about us over here. And he's sitting there seething with anger because you're not lying.
One of the things that you just said, is so profound and prophetic, and it is truth. The strength to always be put on the woman. I remember sitting in church and listening to women testify about the years and years of abuse and the adulterous relationships, the outside children, the gambling away of paychecks, and how they stayed and they prayed and they stayed and they prayed. And here, some 25 or 30 years later, you know, the kids are grown, life is good, God has changed their husband. And I remember very distinctively sitting in church and saying, Lord, I ain't going to make it. I ain't going to make it this long. And I have to say that I dare not call those women fools. I dare not call them, you know, weak, naive. I call them strong. I have to, because I know that God has given each and every one of us a different measure of strength, power, patience, endurance, you know.
Grace.
Just grace. Who can take that? But I knew that I would not be that person. And as I fast and prayed and asked God to, you know, to give me a sign, because I had in my mind that this was not going to work. And instead of listening to the pastor in the churches and you know, started coming back around my family, because that's another thing I have to share with the women. You know, I isolated myself from my family, just would see them on holidays and special occasions because of this, I call it a veil of shame that I wore. On the outside, everything looked good. My ex-husband always had. I was a homeowner when I was 19 years old. I drove nice cars, you know. But on the inside, there was drama. There were times when there were drama. And it wasn't all bad, but the times that it was bad,
wait,
it was bad. It, go ahead.
Let me come in on what you just said. You were a homeowner at age 19.
Yes, ma'am.
He was a provider, had a car, drove nice. I mean, he was a provider, kept a job. You all drove nice cars. Basically, had the material things, went to church. You had the things that you needed. Now, at the beginning of this show, for all of those that are listening, I played a song by CeCe Winans. And that song, Alabaster Box. And you don't know the price of the oil in a woman's alabaster box. Now,
you had
these things, but at what cost?
Yeah. I mean, it cost a lot, you know, because like my family and friends, the way that we grew up in very close-knit family, you know, I was being isolated, you know, from my family. And it wasn't as if his family was that close, even though they were very religious, you know.
And you were going to say you remember one time when we were talking about isolation before I cut in. Never mind. I made you forget.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to, I don't know if I had to finish, you know, just trying to remind women that one of the things that happens is that you get isolated from your family and your friends because you wear this veil of shame where you feel like you're ashamed of what's happening to you. And then you just, in addition to allowing your abuser to disconnect you from your family and friends, you do it yourself because you're so ashamed of what you're going through. And so if you look at any of the social science research when it comes to victims of domestic violence, talks about how their abusers, you know, isolate them and from their family.
You don't have
and their
to go that
because,
far to look. People
you know.
Ain't crazy. They know, you
yes.
know, they don't have to. It's not something that, you know, you have to go read up on a study. You can look at your girlfriend who don't come around anymore. You could look at, you know, somebody who doesn't anymore. They'll catch you out there. Don't call anymore. You know, the isolation, you see it in your family. People hide domestic violence. And I know people that are going through it with their, you know, sister and, you know, loved ones. And, you know, people have gone to jail but have committed, you know, some physical acts for which they need to be in jail. You know, I'm sorry, but sorry not sorry, you know. But for the women that are listening, abuse starts mentally first. And one of the first things that an abuser will do is start cutting you off from people that can witness and be your strength. So in order for your abuser to get you where they want you, and that's controlling you, they have to cut off avenues of support. So they'll start speaking as though you're going over there too much, or so-and-so ain't up to nothing or ain't no good, or, you know, they start putting down. That's the mental game. And I won't say that I actually witnessed that because I haven't been, you know, I went through a bad marriage. And the only reason why I'm still on the phone with you today is because I never caught the Had I caught him, I don't know if I'd be the woman at the well or Gumbo for the Soul or Tribe Family Channel. I might be inmate number 347-99201. And I'm saying this from my heart because I'm a fighter. And when I was cheated on and that verbal abuse, the verbal abuse of you know, acting like you, I'm the wife, but you know, I'm just the baby mama. And see, I'm raised strong. I'm raised strong. I'm raised by a king. I don't know any way to be treated other than a queen.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and so I was the type of woman where
I
go get my daddy, I go get my big brother, I go get my cousin,
yes,
I go get somebody.
Yes.
You know, you couldn't cut me off. Okay, I'm telling, and I'm the baby of the family, so you could forget about all of that. Cutting off, if anything, you know, and so there's just different ways we can make light of it. We all have our different experiences, you know, but I went through the verbal abuse, and it made me so mad, I'd be the first one throwing the punch, you know, and so I wasn't, any physical altercation would come because I couldn't take too much of that tongue lashing. When you start lashing that tongue too much, to where it curdles my blood, it actually curdles my blood when someone, I can't stand a liar, you see, I cannot stand a liar, I disdain liars, and so when you curdle my blood with the lying and the deceit and stuff, oh, it all but drive me over the edge, and next thing you know, I'm throwing a punch.
Okay. Well, I you know, let me just take a couple of steps back. I was not the one that would take a hit without giving one. I just wasn't raised that way. Being in the church,
you so sweet,
changed me
on the radio.
being in the
she
church changed me some, but it you know, and that's one of the reasons you know, when I do these, sit on these panels and I talk to women, you know, the church is what saved his life and it saved my life.
Amen. Come on, say that.
Because one of the things that he knew is that I was not, and then that's one of the reasons that our fights were very infrequent, because he knew that I was not the one that you could just hit. If he hit me, there were consequences. When he hit me, there were absolute consequences. They could be quick,
no,
or they could
right.
be in his sleep. And so he would say things like,
Lord,
girl, you're crazy, and I would tell him, and don't you get it. So I can identify with you when you talk about I would be inmate, because that's one of the things that the considerations that I had for myself. I said, you know what, this man is gonna hit me one day, and I'm gonna kill him. The kids are gonna end up with no parents.
Without
not
their
only
parents,
will they
yes.
not have a father, because he will be deceased, but their mother would be in jail. So it's you know, as and I thank God for that period of time where I was in the apostolic church, because I got deep in the word. I learned how to pray. I learned how to fast. I learned how to listen to God and creating to other people. Because what they were telling me was not working for me. It was not going to work for me. And when you talk about a strong woman, I sat back and I said, the village that I grew up in, and watching my mother without our father, she took care of us, certainly. I can do the same. I've had the best role model. That if I had to do this by myself, I can do this by myself. In early one winter morning, my ex-husband and I got into it. I put my kids in the car, pajamas and all, and got on the road and started driving. Didn't take anything except the clothes on our back, because I said, enough is enough, and I can't live like this. I will not live like this. I will not live like this. I am a smart woman. I am an attractive woman. I have been raised by a strong woman, and I can be a strong woman. So that was my Me Too moment in just that morning. No, in November, at that morning, just looking at the situation and saying, you know what, this is not, I'm not going to keep going through this. I applaud any woman who has endured whatever she's endured to keep her family intact and to maintain her vows and stay in her marriage. That's, I applaud you, but that does not work for everybody. And if you are going through something, you have to stop looking at what and listening to what other people are telling you and saying to you, and listen to yourself. Follow your heart. I moved from Alabama to Michigan. I got in a 6-month program and got a certification to become a lab assistant. Worked while I was working that job, went to community college, got my associate degree. I impressed my professors so while I was in community college that before I graduated with my degree in criminal justice, I had a full-time job working for Wayne County in Michigan.
And wow, from there congratulations.
On, from there on, went to Wayne State University, got my bachelor's.
Wow.
Got my master's.
Come on,
once
testify.
I got my master's, the professors that had known me in their classes at Wayne State and at Wayne County invited me to come teach race and politics and government at the colleges without a PhD.
Wow.
It was at the university. I just want
look at God.
Women to know that you have got to look to you and God for your self-esteem. Stop talking about somebody, you know, your self-esteem or beat your self-esteem. They don't get that power unless you give it to them. They don't get that power unless you give it to them. Never give
Amen.
Anybody that type of power over you.
Wow.
So and you know, and from there, I tell you, God has blessed me. So any and everything that I've wanted to do, Queen, I've done. I wanted to write. I've been writing, and you mentioned writing. I've been writing since I was about in the 5th or 6th grade. We used to do journals back then. And I was writing then, and it came full circle when I started writing books. When I was an undergrad, I wanted to do, I was writing for the newspaper, the Michigan Chronicle newspaper, the Michigan Citizen newspaper. You know, and then God blessed me to even work in the prosecutor's office as a victim's advocate for domestic violence. I mean, it's just everything,
wow.
Things that I didn't think about doing. Just kind of fell in my lap, you know, having my own radio show, having my own television show, running for office, you know, just being in the community, working in the community with other victims of domestic violence, you know, working with guys that are coming back into the community from prison, the reentry programs, you know, just any and everything that has been put in preview where I could help others become to get in touch with who they are and to become what God has purposed them to be has been my path and my roadmap. And I can remember probably about 8 or 9 years ago, when I was in grad school, we had to put together this portfolio of our careers. And as I put together the portfolio and I started putting different pictures and jobs and speaking engagements, I said, well, Lord, I tell you.
Okay.
I wanted to be a teacher. I've been teaching. I wanted to be a politician. I've been a politician, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, wanted to be on the radio. I've done that, you know.
Wow.
In my career, now I served as the first African-American executive director for the American Federation of Teachers, Maryland Professional Employees Council here in Maryland. I mean, God has just been so good to me. I always have to think back, what if I didn't dream? What if I didn't dream? What if I didn't have a vision for myself? You know, in this life, I meet so many people who don't have a vision for themselves, especially young people. When we were growing up, every adult that we met would ask us, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do when you grow up? And so they made you at a young age start looking at occupations that you may fall into at when you become an adult. They start making you think about those things as a young person. And I know that everybody doesn't do that. I know, but it's really troubling to me to meet so many young adults who have no clue about what it is that they tend to do as an adult. Those that are getting ready to come out of high school now, even when I'm meeting and talking to guys that are in their early 30s that are getting ready to be reentered into society after being incarcerated, they still have had a lot of time to think about what they could do with their lives, and they haven't. So, I think for us as adults, we really have to get serious again about training our, you know, boys up to become men and our girls to become women, and not necessarily in the traditional way or whatever. You know, I'm just saying so that they can be, you know, independent
leaders,
leaders, so that they can, you know, be contributors to society rather than takers. You know, and so that they can literally be about a purpose of doing something that's meaningful.
And you know, I want to put a word in there because we are coming up at the top of the hour. But the word that I'm getting from what you are saying is fruitful, so that they can be fruitful, so that they can be productive members of society. And like you said, not necessarily in the traditional way. See, we have to break out of the box and break through the barriers and overcome the mountains and, you know, push past the struggles and the resistance. So I just thank you so much for being so transparent and being my guest here on The Woman at the Well. And we know that you are online. Where can our listeners connect with you at?
Well, I am not online anymore.
Okay. You're on Twitter,
I'm not on Blog Talk anymore. I used to have a show called A Different View with Jacqueline Rochelle, but I'm on Twitter, and my handle is Jacqueline Rochelle, as well as Facebook. And, you know, I'm still doing speaking engagements. My book, The Purpose of Purpose, came out, and it's really, really getting people to do some introspection about their life and their choices, and just realizing that it is no mistake that you're here. None. The things that you have gone through were preordained. God knew that you could make it and that you would make it. And that's the reason why I say I don't judge anybody who has, any woman that has endured years and years of a domestic relationship, I can't judge them, because I've seen, you know, how that relationship at one time, I've heard the testimony of what that relationship used to be like, and I've see what their relationship is now today, and I just say nothing but God. And even in my own life, Queen, even in my own life, nothing and nobody but God. This life, and I want your listeners to hear me well, nobody promised you that this life was going to be easy and that it was going to be a cakewalk. I'm telling you, your mountains come to make you stronger. Your challenges come to make you wiser. Enemies, your enemies cannot do anything to hurt or harm you. And you need to know that.
Queen, we are at the top of the hour. Yes, indeed. You know, and it's just a refreshing, you're a refreshing voice, your strength, your empowerment. I want to make sure that, shout the title of your book out again so that everyone can go look for it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. And if they can get it from you personally, shout out your email address.
Okay, Move Beyond the Colored Line. Racial discrimination is a part of America's race and equality problem. The other part of the problem is you. And you can email me at Jacqueline, JACQUELYN, at Raines, RAINES, E is in Edward, C is in Cat, F is in Frank.org, and I can get an autograph copy to you. And also, The Purpose of Purpose. Again, you can email me, and I will get a copy to you. Go on my Facebook page, send me a message, inbox me, catch me on Twitter, send me a message, and I can get it to you. I am, again, taking speaking engagements on race and politics, on domestic violence, on the reentry and this mass incarceration problem that we're having in the United States. I mean, We've got to talk about solutions, not just the problems.
You know what, Queen? And you're going to talk yourself on to another show because there is a show on this platform entitled Incarcerated Lives Matter. It is hosted by the founder of Incarcerated Lives Matter, Valerie Shaw. She's out of Los Angeles, California. So I'm definitely wanting to connect the two of you so that you can have some continued dialogue. And definitely I will be in touch to inquire further about your books. So, again, your book is Move Beyond the Colored Line. Racial discrimination is a large part of America's race and equality problem, and the other problem is you. That's not the whole title, but I just wanted to, you know, expound more for our listeners. And her book, The Purpose, and you have an upcoming book, Getting to and Preparing for Purpose. Now, come on with that. Tell our listeners a little bit about what they can expect before we go.
So, again, that's just that is going to be an extension of The Purpose of Purpose, and just talking about, you know, what we just got through talking about in terms of the things that we go through in life helps us get to purpose. And, you know, so there'll be some candid conversations in there, and there are some exercises in there so that people can, because I think that even in The Purpose of Purpose, if you get that book, you'll see that it has exercises in there that really gets the reader into doing some introspection, because the introspection is what helps you identify your strengths and your weaknesses. It helps you see how far you have actually come, because a lot of times we just think about what we've gone through. We don't realize what we've gotten to after we've gone through what we've gone through. And so that really helps us.
You know, and just to to comment on that. You mentioned that you journaled back when, you know, you were a little girl. You always wanted to be, you know, you were always a writer. And one of the things that me being always having been a writer, I didn't start journaling until I was influenced by my fourth grade childhood friend who is still, you know, friends. We're still best of friends today. And we were journaling, I would say, in seventh, eighth grade, and then, you know, further on in high school. But I wasn't one that liked journaling. And when I started going through raising the kids, when I became an at-home mom and, you know, I'm raising kids and I needed an outlet and, you know, I'm not getting ready to continue going through the mind psychological abuse, I'm getting it out on paper. So I'm journaling my unhappiness. And the one thing about journaling is if you really get into it, you will go through notebook after notebook after notebook.
Yes.
Now I have notebooks of journaling. So you're talking about a person that is not one that likes to journal. Oh, my goodness. Now I have notebooks upon notebooks. And one thing about journaling is that not only do you get it out, but when you go back and look on your life, you will see how far you came, came from.
Come on now.
And you will see
that's right.
Road is a road full of twists and turns. But like you said, you made it. You get there.
Yes.
You get to where you are. You didn't get to where you are by happenstance. It's by faith and your trust and belief in God. So you have got to stand on a firm foundation with God and get to know him for yourself. Church members can't develop your relationship between you and God for you. They can encourage it. The pastor can't monitor the relationship you have with God. He can lead you to him. He's supposed to shepherd the sheep. But ultimately, it is up to you to have a relationship with God. And I can testify to that as the woman at the well. I didn't have five husbands and the sixth wasn't mine. But I serve a mighty God and he knows everything about me. And I have no problem testifying about his goodness in my life because he brought me a mighty long way.
Yes,
and on that note, my sister Queen, I just want to thank you for being here at the well with me testifying. And I want everybody to definitely go to your Twitter page, your Facebook page, email you, listen to the replay of this show by going to our studio, blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul, and hook up with Ms. Jacqueline Rochelle Rain. She is available for speaking engagements. Just like she's on this show, she could be on your show, she could be on your platform, at your church, at your school, at your political event. She's got it covered. She can handle it. So I want to thank you again, Sister Queen. And
thank you for having me.
It's my honor, and I want to remind everyone that they can catch up with you. You have several more shows that you will be on our network, and I cannot wait to introduce you to Senator Barbara A. Robinson, Emeritus out of Baltimore, Maryland. I cannot wait. You two are going to take off. I might get jealous. I might be way over here in California pouting, but that's okay. I'm going to have to own that pout because I want to see you two queens come together. And then lastly, please do tune in tomorrow. We are celebrating the 58th anniversary of the sit-in at the Tougaloo College Library with none other than two of the Tougaloo Nine civil rights activists, Mrs. Geraldine Edwards Hollis and Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., trained by Megger Evers, along with the foot soldiers. There were a community of first-line civil rights activists that made it possible for us to do what we're doing today. Because public forums like libraries, Negroes, like they said back then, weren't allowed. Black folk couldn't go in. But it's because of people like Geraldine Hollis and Joseph Jackson Jr. that made it possible with the training of Megar Evers, NAACP members, and the foot soldiers. So we will be honoring them on their 58th anniversary, and we ask that all of you get up on your knowledge on Black history and why you, whose shoulders you stand on, because some of them are still among us, and they are here to tell their story, their personal story, firsthand. So be sure to tune in. And with that, my sister, I just want to thank you for being on The Woman at the Well. And again, I'm Beverly Black. Our home is GumboForTheSoulInternational.com, and we are Tribe Family Channel, Facebook.com/Tribe Family Channel, at Tribe Family US on Twitter, TribeFamilyChannel@gmail.com, and you are most invited to reach out if you would like to be a guest on The Woman at the Well or any number of our shows that you may find at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. Again, Jacqueline, it has been an honor, privilege, and a pleasure. And I just want to, like I told you in the green room, today I am honoring the 113th birthday of my dear grandmother, Selena Davis Cargill. I love you, and I want to invite our listeners to honor their grandmothers, mothers, or the matriarch, the sister, friend in your life. Go to GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. We have a call for submissions to Women of Honor 2, our second installment in the Gumbo for the Soul Women of Honor series. Dave Chappelle's mother wrote the foreword. Her name is Dr. Yvonne Sion. And with that, we will see you again tomorrow, same Tribe Family channel, same Tribe Family number. You have a blessed one, and thank you again for tuning in. Jacqueline, my sister, queen friend, we will talk soon again, all right?
Good night.
Good night, and God bless. Thank you again, everyone.
God bless you.
The tears that made her blind. She felt such pain. Some spoke in anger, heard folks whisper, "There's no place here for her kind." Still on she came, through the shame that flushed her face, until at last she knelt before his feet. And though she spoke no words, everything she said was heard. As she poured her love for the master from her box of alabaster, thine come to pour my praise on him. I call from Mary Alabaster Bus. to the sin that had me bound. Poured my life without measure into a little treasure box I thought I found. Until the day when Jesus came to me and healed my soul with the one. Don't be angry if I wash his feet with my tears.